a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good group here.
And we're ready to begin.
Well, good morning. As Mr. Kafka said, I'm Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels. It's a privilege to be with you today, and the governor is, as a number of you know, is out in Washington, D.C. He's attending National Governors Association meeting and has a breakneck schedule from going to the White House as well as meeting with individuals at the Department of Defense. With what's transpiring from our budget perspective and the issues relative to just funding, he is meeting with folks that deal with the Air Force and our Air Force base at Ellsworth and issues that are part of that. He's become, has had a good and continues to have a great relationship with those people who are in charge of those facilities. Secretary Yonkers, who's the individual in charge of those decision points, and the governor are going to be meeting later this week. In addition to that, he chairs a committee on natural resources, and it's for a first-term governor, for a freshman governor, we refer to it. It's very impressive, and one of the main hearings that they will be having regarding natural resources happens to be the Corps of Engineers and water. And when we, as you'll recall, recently taken office 2 years ago, that spring we had major flooding. And in that flooding work and working with the Corps, not only here in Pierre, but all the way down the river, and I was responsible for the response and working with the teams all the way from Yankton down to Sioux City. And got to understand the Corps of Engineers and the issues regarding the Corps of Engineers and the information that they receive. And Governor had his boots on the ground as well and became very, very knowledgeable, as we all did, in a very short order, what works and what doesn't work, what's functional and what's dysfunctional. And one of the major issues was not calculating and being able to figure out what the snowpack would be, especially in the plains. And that's what happened. We literally had the perfect storm in retrospect, and the investigation that was done indicated a couple of things. Number one, the mapping that we were working with was antiquated, old. Secondly, we also found that from that standpoint, we had circumstances where it should have been more predictable. If you knew what was going to happen from the snowmelt on our plains and up in the hills, they have actual monitoring systems that really should have been in place and given us more forewarning. And those are some of the major issues he will be dealing with. The other aspect of it is water is life, and we know in the middle of the drought that there's a lot of issues regarding that. But one of the constant, I would say, pulls and tugs between us and the Corps of Engineers and the federal government is who actually, what entity controls the flow? Obviously, God owns the water. God created the water. But in terms of man and womankind, how is it that from a jurisdiction or a business perspective, can the Corps of Engineers deal with the water? A couple of months ago, they had put out through the Corps of Engineers a proposal that they were now going to contemplate starting to charge communities for the withdrawal of water for their water system. I'm from Yankton, and we have an intake there that allows us to drink water. And so consequently, there's no charge currently, and that's true up and down the Missouri River. And so there's going to be, I think the understatement is, a debate about this, and it'll be something to continue to watch. So we're proud of the governor. I mean, obviously, he's been a friend of mine and vice versa for many years from the legislature, but he is excited, and to be a chair of a committee like that is great for our state, regardless of who it is. But in his case, he understands it. He loves it. He comes from the land as a farmer. And with what we've been learned, we were baptized with water, literally so, and figuratively. The next item is that we have today with us visiting with Mr. Jason Luth, who is the journalism instructor at Washington High School. And what's really interesting is the Washington High School Journalism class, and they're journalism students. This is their winter honors trip, right?
Yes.
And they're all here, and so their honor trip is to be able to come to Pierre and to be able to write about it, and it's very impressive. And I know that you've come for a number of years, and it's very good. And today you'll be watching the House and the Senate, and Mr. Luth will take you to both of them. And I preside over the Senate as the president of the Senate in that role, and it'll be a real privilege to introduce you. But what's happened procedurally now, as I'm sure you've studied, is there are bills now that have gone across the respective bodies that have passed. Like right now, there's a debate and discussion going on a Sentinel bill, and there's a debate and discussion going on in an area that I'm involved in, and that happens to be Veterans Services. It is a department and a team member of mine I'm in charge of, along with the military. And so to that point, I would like to say that yesterday was a tremendous day in the state legislature, because the House of Representatives passed a bill, and it's Senate Bill 27. It was obviously a bill that started in the Senate. That's why we call it SB, or Senate Bill. But we introduced it from state government's perspective, the governor's office, and the Department of Veterans Affairs, because for many years we have been working on a new veterans home in Hot Springs. Just to pause, especially since we have journalism students here, this is not the Veterans Administration of the federal government. That is a whole nother operation. So I'm a veteran of the United States Navy, and I could receive services at veterans facility, say in Sioux Falls, depending on my eligibility status and a wartime participation, et cetera. But we have had pre-statehood, actually, a home in Hot Springs that is a state-owned and run home. It was built originally for individuals who'd served in the Civil War. And our journalism students and history students would know that we are a state that was built on the history of the Civil War. We have various counties near where your home is that were named after people who were famous in the Civil War. And you guess? Happens to be Lincoln County. Union County is south. Grant County is north. We're in Pierre, and just north of us, about 40 miles, is a little city, a great city, known as Gettysburg. That just didn't happen. And so our citizens that came and actually homesteaded and was part of developing and sitting in South Dakota and working were Civil War veterans. And in order to thank them and take care of them, a home was built out in Hot Springs. And if you've never been to see the historic facility, it's amazing. But no new facility has been built there in a long time. In fact, if you walk to the gravesites, you will see individuals who are buried there who served in various regiments during the Civil War. And on the 150th of the anniversary of the Civil War, it's pretty moving. So we were, and I apologize for those obviously here that are calling in and our radio media folks, but we're going to put up right now. Today I will be signing the bill in the Senate, which is required under the Constitution, and then the governor will sign that probably next week. And that's a construction bill that we will start the construction on this spring of a new state veterans home. A $40 million expense that will be in service in about 3 years, and in Hot Springs, and it will be an amazing facility. And I'll ask Mr. Kafka if you would get that picture so that at least we can put it up, and for a second at least get it on our public television. And let's see if folks can see that. I'll cover me up. It doesn't matter. Are you able to see that?
Yep.
The one thing that I would encourage all of us to do is, we talk a lot about veteran service, and I'm not going to talk about the specifics of the facility, but if you have the opportunity and you see this and focus on how magnificent it is, the picture, it's showing where our current, the original building was built before the turn of, it was late 1800s building, with the turret there, and then the placement on one level of the beds. There'll be units for people who have memory issues like dementia and other issues like Alzheimer's. There's going to be units for people that need to have other care, and then people that just live there. And this is a $40 million facility to take care of folks in various neighborhoods with some matching grant money. We are very, very excited to serve these people, but it's not the State Veterans Home. It's the Michael Fitz Morris Veterans Home. And if anybody wants to go ahead and Google Michael Fitz Morris, he is one of two surviving South Dakota Medal of Honor winners. And across the street from the Capitol in Pierre, when you visit, or those that are here, is our Soldiers and Sailors building. I thought when we got elected, since I was in the Navy, we could change that name and call it Sailors and Soldiers, but they objected to that. So, but you go into that building, and few people even from here have been upstairs, and you walk in, and there is a Hall of Honor where people are awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. As you probably know, the Congressional Medal of Honor is the highest honor given to military heroes. All people who are in service are heroes, I think, but you'll see the citation for Leo Thorsness, who is from your region, the eastern part of the state, who fought in Vietnam, and did, as did Michael Fitz Morris, who still lives in South Dakota. And if you happen to YouTube or Google Michael Fitz Morris' name and Medal of Honor, you will see an interview by him. And we're free. You're able to come here, the students who are in journalism, to come here and free to write what you wish, subject to school rules. But those who are listening, the media folks here, not like other countries I've been in where there's censorship and control by federal governments or dictators, it's hard for us to comprehend it. It was for me until I lived in those places. But it's because people have fought and done incredible things, and that's why Mr. Fitzmaurice's name is on our State Veterans Home. And so thank you for not only indulging me, I could go on and on about this because it is truly an honor to be part of this project, and the governor has focused that we will get that done. With that, it's open for questions. Great.
Do we have any questions for media on the line? If so, press pound 6 to unmute your phone. Ask your question. Immediately press star 6.
Lieutenant Governor Tony Mangan at KCCR Radio.
Hi, Tony.
How are you, Lieutenant Governor?
I'm great.
Hey. Just a quick question. As you look at the next 2 weeks, and we got through the crossover day, as you're watching all of this, what do you think are the big issues, and where do you and the governor fit in on those discussions?
Thank you for the question. You know, as usual, from the coverage, it's going to be like in our homes. It's budgets. It's trying to deal with what funds are available, what are not. The governor is getting a briefing in D.C. on the sequestration or what's happening there. We believe that it will occur. It may last for a couple of months until folks realize that something needs to be done, but that's what we're preparing for. That's the briefing that I received yesterday from a Council of Economic Advisors that serves the governor and us in advance of setting estimates for a budget. As you know, Tony, we have two budget years we're dealing with, the one that we're currently in that ends in June 30th, and then the proposal for 14, and all of the different bills that are proposing expenditure like scholarships and economic development and taking care of pine beetle fiasco that's occurring out in the hills, and we can go on and on. But just like in our homes, Tony, the priorities we can determine by looking at our bank accounts and see what we're doing. Education funding and the proportionality of that between local and state effort, of course, is part of that. And I would say that we will get down to a discussion about community service providers. And for behavioral health services, which includes addiction service, care of those who are disabled, because that system is set up so that the state taxpayer dollars will be part of making sure that those people are taken care of and then not necessarily in state institutions. So that's the obvious. I do think that those will be, as we talk, final day issues that will be not only in the Appropriations Committee, but in conference committees. I think there are a number of economic development bills that everyone is talking about extensively. I do believe, just because of the events that have happened, that there will be various bills dealing with the Second Amendment that will still be in discussion as we go through. And collectively, just prioritization on various items that we should study even further. So I really do predict that there will be a focus by the legislature to be more active when the legislature is out of session and in doing various studies.
If I could follow up on that.
Yes, sir.
From your standpoint, how are you looking at this session compared to others? I mean, you know, in past years you've had a lot of discussions, or, you know, it depends on what the issues are between second floor and the third floor. Are you having a lot of those this time? I mean, is there a sense of urgency at this point than compared to past years or not?
Well, not for us, but, you know, I was Speaker. And in that role, I got fixated, probably it was a diagnosable fixation, it still is, on a calendar. And the calendar for our legislature actually ends on a Friday. And especially since we have students in the room, Tony, Fridays at the end of the school year, those are two combustible experiences. They're usually film day. And there will be a lot of antsy people, in my estimation, on that Friday. I may be wrong, but the Friday before the last week is a day off, is March 1st. And so it'll be very interesting because that comes very quickly. It's just 2 weeks. And the bill load is not that significant, but that's really an illusion because of the issues and the numbers that we're going to get. Next week also, Tony, will be the day where a revenue number is determined, and all of the data will come in. And again, it's really hard. It's like nail and jello to the wall, because you have to be able to say, we believe our budgetary numbers for revenue from sources will be this starting in July and last for a whole nother year up into 2014. So that is very difficult to do. And so I think we'll certainly be here the last day. I will take an exit ramp and say that the governor and I serve in the legislature. We have great deference to the legislative process and the body, and we believe that the legislators, as your representatives and as reported by you under the First Amendment, is to try to figure out what it is that the people believe the priorities should be. The governor proposes his priorities because they're necessary, but that is the stage that we're in. Now, candidly, I've worked with Governor Bill Janklow, who was just the opposite. We would sit until 3 in the morning arguing about certain things, and Bill became a good friend. But it was Bill's leadership style to say this is what's going to happen and lead that way. The governor also has, in that emphasis, has suggested that the legislature determine from both budgets that there's one-time money. So if you think about it in your home, there was money that is sitting there in a savings account, and you could either save it or you could spend it. And in the combination of 2 years we're dealing with, there's $26 million just one time. It's nothing that you can add. You can't go out and buy a car that you have a payment for. It would be just one time. So you could buy a refrigerator or buy a new piece of furniture. And in that analogy, that's what they're working through, Tony.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Tony.
Do we have any other questions from our callers on the line?
Good.
Okay. We'll wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Everybody drive safe.